This is Broadway to Brazil, the only podcast to tell the remarkable story of Corinthians Casuals FC, the English non-league club who are big in Brazil. By now, we've made it patently clear that the Corinthians Casuals are unique, having listed so many of the ways in which they stand apart from their non-league counterparts. But we haven't yet covered the most remarkable aspect of the club, and its links to the development of football across the world. It is this history that connects this small non-league entity with one of the globe's genuine sporting giants, Brazilian club Corinthians. Because of their pioneering past, the club has an unusually internationalist outlook today. Where else in the English non-league would you find supporters bearing the flags of Brazil and Real Madrid, alongside banners written in Portuguese? It's also the reason why Corinthians Casuals, to this day, can board a plane, fly more than 8,000 miles across the Atlantic, and be greeted at the airport as heroes.
I didn't go to London Eye, no Big Ben, no first thing. We got there in the evening. And then first thing in the morning, we got an Uber straight to King George Field.
You may remember Rafael Pedroso from our first episode. He's the one who, upon arrival from Sao Paulo, Brazil, on a holiday with his family, immediately set course for Tolworth, desperate to reach the hallowed turf of King George's Field, home of the Corinthians Casuals. It's fair to say that his hometown club, the Brazilian Corinthians, are in a slightly different league to the boys in Tolworth, and not just because of their geographical separation. Twice world champions, the Sao Paulo club boasts a fan base of millions, with match days played in front of a 40,000-seater stadium. At King George's, meanwhile, attendances barely break the 200 mark. But the bond between Brazil's most decorated club and England's highest-ranked amateurs is remarkably strong, and perhaps unlike anything else in football. Today we'll be learning about this century-old relationship, and, as we bask in the glow of an England World Cup performance that surprisingly eclipsed Brazil's, we'll be learning about how the game was exported from these islands to the other corners of the globe and the key role played by Corinthians FC in facilitating the transformation of football into the universal game. Having started episode one on the Broadway, it's only right that we round off the series in Brazil.
And these five railway workers watched the Corinthians play in 1910 and thought, hang on, we should start a football team.
It's great to see your flag waving on the other side of the field. It's an amazing thing. I mean, it's amazing how football can bring people together. I mean, people this distance together.
And I've pushed your trolley through the arrival entrance of Sao Paulo Airport and thing opened. And there were television cameras and fans with scarves. And you were almost kind of looking around, well, who are these people at sea? And then all of a sudden you're getting interviewed and that people turned up to come and see us. And I think at that point, that's when you really started to realise.
Is Corinthians' roots are here. For being a club that people give the blood for the team, the players, okay. They play with love.
Yes.
And I see exactly the same here, much more, actually.
But before we explore the Brazilian connection, let's turn the clock a little further back to the very first Corinthians FC foreign tour, South Africa. The year is 1897. Queen Victoria is on the throne. The unified states of Italy and Germany are but a couple of decades old, and the 39 states of US President William McKinley's Union continue to recover following the American Civil War. Meanwhile, imperialist European powers are jostling and vying for territory and resources in newly discovered lands to their immediate south, a political episode that would come to be known as the Scramble for Africa. The African continent's southern tip at this stage is mostly claimed by Britain, but British desires to unite their disparate regional colonies into one South African entity has led them into direct conflict with Dutch-speaking settlers in the region, known as the Boers. Okay, so by now you're thinking I've lost my train of thought. This is a podcast about a football team, not a postgraduate history essay on diplomacy and warfare in the colonial age. But believe it or not, the old Corinthian FC, forebears to today's Corinthian Casuals, had their own small part to play in the Boer Wars.
I think they were good to everyone. They went around and played. They spread the gospel around the world. They were true ambassadors.
There speaks Rob Cavallini, author of Play Up Corinth, The History of Corinthian FC, and a man who educated us so adeptly in episode 2 on the domestic history of the club. If you recall, the Corinthians were the fundamental underpinning to the earliest successes of the English national side. But when I spoke to Rob, we also discussed the overseas exploits of the club's Victorian stars. Rob alerted me to the fact that the Second Boer War, 1899 to 1902, was sandwiched between two Corinthian FC tours of the region.
And when you look at it, then when I go on tours to like South Africa, it's like, fine, South Africa, but they went in 1897, they went in 1903, right in the middle, they had the Boer War, which was particularly brutal, and that's where the British invented the concentration camp, and there was thousands of needless deaths, and they went into that environment and came away with a lot of credit and probably built a few bridges. So,
is that right? What with the local community, with the Boers or that sort of thing?
Yes.
Right. Okay.
Because it couldn't have been easy. The British killed 20,000 or 30,000 in concentration camps, mainly women and children. So it wasn't and it wasn't an easy place for them to go.
And what they would have played. Boer teams, local teams, and
they played all over. They played about 20 games all round the country, and they were definitely playing in the Orange Free State, which was one of the Boer main areas. So,
while true that football can regrettably turn people against one another, there is enough evidence over history to suggest that the sport can also be applied as a force for reconciliation and understanding. And here we have perhaps one of the most enduring examples. 17 years prior to British and German troops having a Christmas kickabout on no man's land during the First World War, Corinthian FC were entering territory upon which its home government had committed horrendous crimes in the very recent past, and came away having made the locals smile. South Africa was just the start. From there, they continued to travel, albeit a little closer to home at first.
Though I don't think there was a country in Europe the club hasn't visited. I mean, they spent a lot of time in Germany and Bohemia, Austria, Czech Republic, as it is now. And they went up to Scandinavia. And when they went to places like Scandinavia, because there was no like national cup competition, they actually took with them a cup and they gave it to them and said, this is a present for you. We'd like you to start your own football competition. So while they were abstaining from the FA Cup, they were encouraging the development of competition in other countries.
The trophy that Rob speaks of is the Corinthian Bowl, which has its origins in a Corinthian FC tour of Sweden in 1904. The English side had predictably wiped the floor with their Swedish hosts in Stockholm and Gothenburg, as they tended to do wherever they went. Upon the tour's conclusion, Corinthians captain Charles Reeford Brown announced the club's intention to donate a charity cup in memory of their visit. Similarly, in 1908, following a tour to Budapest, the Corinthian Cup became an important part of the Hungarian football calendar. More than just charity fundraisers, the idea of these trophies was to sow the seeds of annual competition that would vastly improve footballing standards throughout Europe. Within 2 years, the Swedish FA was formed and the Corinthian Bowl remained the most prestigious tournament in the country for several years, while in Hungary, the Corinthian Cup continued to be competed for until 1945. And while we're talking about the club's European exploits, there's just one other small footnote to this piece of history. Corinthian FC are also at the root of perhaps the most famous club colours on the continent.
The Real Madrid link, it was publicised on the Real Madrid website. Their first coach was an Englishman. And they were, when they founded the club, which was just Madrid in those days, he suggested let's play in white because the Corinthians are the best team in England and they play in white. It's as simple as that.
Well, While the Corinthians' European trips made a lasting impact, the most seismic overseas journey of theirs was the cross-continental one made in 1910. To help us tell that story, let's first introduce you to Charles Miller, today considered to be the father of Brazilian football. Born in Sao Paulo in 1874 to Scottish-English parenthood, Miller was sent back to his ancestral lands at 10 years of age to attend Bannister Court Public School in Southampton. It was here in Hampshire that Charles learnt to play football and cricket, turning out both for and against Corinthian FC in this time. On the day of his return to Brazil a decade later, he had in his possession perhaps the most significant items of hand luggage that this country would ever permit through its borders. Two footballs, a few jerseys, and a book of FA rules. The game had been played in Brazil before this moment, mainly by English expats, but it was with Miller that football is truly considered to have arrived in the country that would later come to define the beautiful game's global image. At first, however, the game largely remained a preserve of Miller and his ilk, well-heeled Europeans with little inclination to involve local Brazilians. But this was about to change. The arrival of the Corinthians in 1910, upon invitation from Charles Miller himself, led to one small group of railway workers being so greatly impressed by the footballing skills of these gentlemanly visitors that they vowed to replicate what they had seen, right down to the name. Here's Chris Watney, a former Corinthian Casuals player who recently completed production of a film that details this remarkable episode in the club's history.
These five railway workers watched the Corinthians play in 1910 and thought, hang on, we should start a football team. So they created a club. Charles Miller helped them with the name. He said, why don't you call them the Corinthians? Charles Miller, who had played for the Corinthians whilst he lived in England, he said, why don't you call them the Corinthians after the guys you just watched? And sure enough, that team has now gone on to become the two-time world champions. So that was 1910 that all happened.
There's something of an irony to all of this. The old Corinthian FC may have had many virtuous qualities, but a connection to the working-class man on the street was probably not one of them, as a group of assorted Etonians and other public schoolboys, including England cricket captains, Wimbledon champions and record-breaking athletes. They were once known as the most exclusive gentlemen's club in England, due to their 50-man cap on membership. But their status as gentlemen of leisure did not preclude them from inspiring men of graft.
And they inspired five locals to create the first team, which wasn't simply for the high classes. You know, there's a lot made of how the Corinthians were these public schoolboys and were a bit silver spoon and it was all a bit elitist. But actually, in truth, around the world, in other countries, what they did was they expanded football's horizons to have everyone play the game. And in Brazil, it was very much an elitist sport until the Corinthians came along.
As Rob Cavallini notes, if one is to consider elitism from a purely sporting perspective, then the roles of the two clubs are today entirely reversed.
It's a very interesting scenario because you've got the most elitist club in England going to Brazil and inspiring the club. And Corinthians now have 20 million fans, Corinthian Casuals 200. I mean, they've gone to complete opposite ends of the spectrum.
This bizarre juxtaposition between global giants and footballing pauper is what often makes match days at the Casuals such a unique affair. It is more common than not to have a Brazilian Corinthians fan in attendance at King George's, many of whom have spoken to Broadway to Brazil. A little later in the episode, we'll hear more from those who embrace their modest English surroundings, as if they were at the world's most prestigious sporting arena. But the history of the Corinthians in Brazil didn't stop in 1910. They made a return trip in 1913, although without playing their local namesakes, and crossed the Atlantic once again a year later. But this 1914 South American tour, which was to also include a first trip to Argentina, turned out to be the tour that wasn't. For while the team were at sea, Britain declared war on Germany, and Corinthians' history changed forever. Several of the players were reservists in the army, and immediately upon landing set course for their return to Europe so they could join the war effort. It was a tragic milestone in the club's story. Few football clubs lost as many players as the Corinthians in the devastation of the First World War. The original Corinthian FC were never to return to Brazil, and it was to be another 70 years until post-merger Corinthian Casuals made their way to Sao Paulo. But when it finally happened, It proved to be the first of several momentous South American trips for the Chocolate and Pink.
...1988 was a truly historic year for Corinthian Casuals. The previously nomadic club finally gained its own home in Tolworth, and to celebrate this, as well as the 50th anniversary of the merger between the Corinthians and the Casuals, they decided it was high time they returned to Brazil and finally play a match at the home of the very club their footballing forefathers had inspired. Corinthians were by this stage one of the biggest clubs in Brazil, while Corinthian Casuals toured in the regional amateur ranks of the Spartan League. So just imagine how it felt for the English non-leaguers as they walked out of the tunnel at the cavernous concrete bowl that is the Estadio do Paysambu, flanked by a hysterical hullabaloo of dignitaries, mascots, flags, banners and brass band members, met by the roar of thousands of local fans chanting in unison, "Corinthians! Corinthians!" Their opponents that day were a Corinthians 11, made up largely of veteran ex-pros. And so seriously was the occasion taken that one of the game's all-time greats, 1970 World Cup winner Rivelino, came out of retirement especially to take part. What's more, in the latter stages of the game, the legendary Socrates, one of the biggest names in Brazilian football, swapped the white of Corinthians Paulista for the pink and brown of their English namesakes, pulling on the number 8 jersey he'd made famous in a hugely symbolic gesture that reinforced the bond between these two historic clubs. When we tell you that Corinthian Casuals is no ordinary non-league football team, these are the kinds of moments we have in mind. After 1988, the club had its taste for travel back again, and the old touring days of the Corinthians enjoyed a mini revival. In May 1992, they visited Japan, a trip that the first team manager at the time, Steve Bangs, recalls with great fondness.
We went to Japan.
Right.
And that was an amazing experience for everybody who went.
That's very unusual, isn't it, for a team of that level?
Yeah, it was great.
We played
in Hokkaido, we played near Tokyo, we played in Kyoto, toured around on trains and stuff. It was amazing. So when we got to Hokuriku, we coached 500 children on the waterlogged pitch before the match. Game was televised. Probably about 2,500 people came to watch. So, and then we took a train to Kyoto, had tea with the mayor of Kyoto. It was incredible. They treated us like royalty.
When you say that you noticed when you went around the world what it meant to people, did they know who you were?
Oh, yeah.
You turned up in Japan and they knew.
Oh, yes, they knew a lot about us. And I think they were surprised that we weren't probably a higher standard than we were. I mean, we did okay in Japan. We had 2 draws and 1 very heavy defeat. I mean, they pitched us against a professional team out there. And that was a real mismatch. We lost 5-0, but I mean, it was a real hammering. But everybody, they looked after us and they gave us sort of receptions and they thought, you know, loads of people wanted to ask questions, TV, and I had lots of TV interviews, press interviews about the club and things. And I had to learn the history so that I could answer the questions.
Steve is a teacher at Sutton Grammar School, alongside 2 other former Corinthian Casuals stalwarts, Tony Blunt and Simon Shergold. And Tony and Simon were both members of the next generation of Casuals to visit Brazil. Imbued with stories of the 88 trip, Socrates, Rivelino and all that, the club weren't going to wait nearly as long to arrange a return this time. And in 2001, they touched down to a hero's welcome in Sao Paulo. I recently sat down with the 3 teachers in Simon Shergold's history classroom, the very same one I was taught in my time at Sutton Grammar, and their faces lit up at the mention of Brazil as they relived their moment of celebrity.
We had a couple of meetings beforehand and they laid out the itinerary and said you're going to be doing this and doing this. And then you walk through the arrivals. You walk through
we were told to wear suit and tie on a plane.
On the plane.
Yeah.
We had to get changed when the plane landed. And I pushed your trolley through the arrival entrance of Sao Paulo Airport and the thing opened. And there were television cameras and fans with scarves. And you were almost kind of looking around, well, who are these people at sea? And then all of a sudden you're getting interviewed and that people turned up to come and see us. And I think at that point, that's when you really started to realise.
Before playing a game themselves, the Corinthian Casuals players were invited as guests to watch their host play a crucial title match, which would see them crowned Sao Paulo state champions. It was an eye-opening moment for these boys from the London suburbs.
They were playing, I think, in the final of the actual Corinthians were playing in the final of the state. Second leg of the state championship.
Yeah.
And we were guests of honour, the whole squad. So the whole squad went to this, I mean, 80,000, yeah. 90,000 people. The
stadium was shaking.
Everyone standing and bouncing. And the game was 0-0. It was a really poor game, actually. They were 3-0 up from the,
wasn't it?
They were 3-0 up for the first leg, saw it out 0-0, and the whole place didn't stop rocking for 90 minutes. I've never seen anything like it.
The rest of the trip held plenty in store for the players, who were treated like royalty, even as their football skills were being shown up by the locals.
Yeah, it was brilliant, you know. We went to the consulate, a bit like you did in Japan. Yeah. The consulate in Sao Paulo, and then we went to Rio for the day, which was great. You know, we managed to go to Rio for the day, and we got hammered at beach football by eight-year-old kids. You know, absolutely hammered. But that was just all part of the fun. Really.
Yeah,
wonderful.
Then it was from the beach to the pitch, as Tony, Simon, and their teammates had to contend with two Corinthian Paulista sides on opposite ends of the age scale in the baking Sao Paulo heat.
So we played the Corinthians under-21s, and there's some great moments. Again, I was playing it right back, and I was yelling, so I was playing it right back, yelling him to get tight, because he was giving their midfield loads of room. I mean, they were killing us. And I remember he turned around and he said, "You haven't been in the sun yet, have you?" Because the stand was so big that my area was in the shade. And as soon as I moved in the sun, I realised how hot it was. Oh, I mean, you know, really funny things you vividly remember. Yeah. So we played there in front of, I don't know, 2,000-3,000. It was crazy. I mean, their fans are incredible.
Yeah.
And then the Vets played after, and because Si and I were a bit older. I mean, I say a bit older, 30 and 28, or even younger.
Yeah, maybe I was 25. Yeah, I was 25.
Because we played three games on the tour, most of our Vets got injured. So Si and I had to play in the Vets match, which was straight after. So it was the first team. We played against the Corinthians under-21s, lost 2-0. It was a good game. And then our Vets played the Corinthians Vets. But to play for the Corinthians Vets, you had to have won the Brazilian League. So they've got internationals,
like three or four members of that 82 World Cup squad in their team. I mean, they scored three goals at the goal he never saw.
We could keep you entertained with the players' memories of that tour for hours if we had time. But in the end, that trip was an emotional awakening for the Corinthian Casuals players. It gave them a real sense of the impact their predecessors had had on the rise of the game in the world's most iconic footballing nation.
We were lucky enough to go to Brazil. You then got more of a sense of what it meant around the world and kind of, wow, we are part of something.
Chris Watney was also on the 2001 tour. His connection to the Corinthian Casuals had started when a friend recommended the club as the right place for a young Watney to recover from an injury.
I first played for the club in 1999. It's an incredible club. I sort of didn't really know the history. When I was first told by a guy who was sort of helping me in my sort of young football career, was find a club, and I had been to Sutton and had a bad hamstring injury and I needed to find somewhere to go and play football, and he said, "Well, why don't you go and play at Corinthian Casuals? They're an amateur team, which means there's no contracts, so it's a good shop window to be in, and you know, who knows what will happen." I was only 18 or something at the time. And then slowly you kind of learn about this story, and I got taken to Brazil for the tour in 2001, and suddenly I was in the midst of this sort of Beatlemania sort of mayhem, and I suddenly thought, hang on, there's no chance I'm going to experience this at any other club until you get to the professional levels of the Premier League, really. I mean, it's an absolute unique experience. And it just blew my mind. And I thought, I love this. You know, I want to be more part of this.
Watney became completely enamoured with the club and what it stood for. He studied the history, took it all in, and fell head over heels in love with Corinthian Casuals. So much so that when he noted the 100th anniversary of the aborted 1914 tour was approaching, he decided to try and arrange a trip to Brazil to mark that missed opportunity.
And so I thought, well, it's only right that we try, 100 years on, to go back and fulfil the matches that never happened. You know, there's this set of games which never happened because they only spent one day in Rio in 1914 before coming back straight away. It was incredible. I mean, when we finally got there, because it had been such a journey to get there. It started in 2013.
You didn't go by boat, did you?
No, but we started in 2013, and when we started, the club hadn't even had, we didn't even have a phone number for the head office of Corinthians. We didn't have an email address for the Corinthians. The relationships had really drifted apart, and it was a real slog just getting to them. And it took, I've got a Brazilian brother-in-law, and every day, he's a gardener, or he was a gardener at that time, and every day after work he used to come round to mine, and we used to phone head office of Corinthians, so we found the number on the internet. And for 6 months we were hung up on every day. Probably thought it was some joker in Sao Paulo or something, I don't know. But for whatever reason, we couldn't get phoned. Literally every day for 6 months we phoned them. And eventually we broke through, and it slowly came together. But it was such a mission getting there.
Watney's commendable persistence paid off in the end. And in 2015, the Corinthian Casuals arrived in Sao Paulo to a terrific welcome. The South London side were absolutely overwhelmed.
When we finally arrived, I was so overjoyed. When you came off the plane and you met crowds at the airport, welcoming you and screaming in the airport and all that sort of thing, and throwing Jamie Byer up on their shoulders, it was an amazing moment to finally manage to get there.
Once again, the non-leaguers were invited to play Corinthians Paulista, but there was a key difference this time. They weren't playing a veterans 11 or the under-21s. For the first time ever, the first teams of Corinthian Casuals and Corinthians Paulista played against one another, just 18 months after Corinthians had been crowned FIFA World Club champions with a victory over Chelsea.
How do you feel being on the pitch with Corinthians' first team? Didn't they completely outplay you? What happened?
Well, they didn't, though, really. I mean, it was strange because we... it was a strange one because we obviously went onto that pitch thinking, hang on, this is going to get pretty messy.
The mismatch of all mismatches.
Yeah. I think a couple of weeks beforehand, we'd lost 4-0 to Folkestone.
Right.
And you think, well, now we're playing the world champions. Like, what's going to happen? And Joe Hicks and Danny Dudley were marking a striker called Guerrero. And he'd just come back from winning the Golden Boot at the Copa America. And you're thinking, God, what is going to happen here? This could be horrific. And I'm told that at halftime it was still 0-0. And I'm told that the TV companies didn't know what to do because they'd scheduled like 8 minutes of halftime just to replay the goals. But there hadn't been any goals. So we really surprised everyone. And it was amazing having that moment of having the amateur on the pitch again with the professional. It's pretty unique. Mm. I mean, it harks right back to the Corinthians day when we used to go and play all the professional teams as the amateur Corinthians. And we surprised a lot of people. And it was interesting because when you're a child and you think growing up, what's it going to be like playing in front of 30,000 in a stadium like that? And is it going to be intimidating? Are you going to be nervous? For me personally, I can't speak for everyone, but it really didn't affect anything. I mean, it only really got you excited and made you want to play. And the pitch was so beautiful. The ball was so perfect. It felt like you couldn't really hit a bad pass. And there were passages where we actually played some quite nice football.
What about the crowd? That must have been a novelty for you guys.
Incredible.
Yeah.
Absolutely incredible. The noise. And what was amazing, and you can see it in the pictures when you look back, is that you can spot the occasional pink and brown shirt in the crowd. And I think they would have gone mad if we'd scored. I think they would have. I think they loved it.
Yeah.
But, it was so exciting to be in that crowd.
And in the spirit of Socrates donning the pink and brown 27 years earlier, one Corinthian side loaned the other player of theirs. But this time, the Corinthian Casuals weren't acquiring a Brazilian superstar. Jamie Byatt, the club legend whose recent retirement we covered in episode 5, became the first Englishman to play for Corinthians Paulista and was agonisingly close to becoming their first English goal scorer too.
And then Jamie nearly scored, playing for Corinthians. He nearly scored and the ball got nicked off his toe by a young striker of Corinthians called Luciano, and he put it in. And I'm told that the Corinthian fans, Corinthian players had a bit of a go at Luciano afterwards in the changing room. because they realised that he'd stolen this great moment. Because it would have been, you know, a dream for me at the end of the film if Jamie had scored playing for Corinthians. But it's the ultimate pub quiz question. What, you know, which English player played for the Brazilian champions in 2015? No one will know it, but Jamie did it. And he's actually now listed on the... They've got an app for... It's like a database of all the Corinthian players and history and all that. And he's listed as an official player of Corinthians Paulista, which is... It's incredible.
While memories of the game are clearly special, many of the stories that Watney and his peers recall are those that concern the enduring fondness and raw emotion that Corinthians Paulista's fans still reserve for their English counterparts, all these years after that remarkable first impression in 1910.
And then when we were there, we did so many things which I think caught everyone off guard. Like, we took the team to just certain little things which you just don't have the ability to do when you're a non-league footballer in England, in Tolworth. We went to a children's cancer ward for a charity visit, which was incredibly emotional. I think everyone was in tears by the end when they left. And we gave out shirts to all the kids, and we spent time with them all and chatted with the parents and all that sort of thing. And we were told how much it was going to impact the kids and how much it was going to impact those families just to break up their daily routine of trying to get better. And just being able to be in a position where you have the ability to actually affect people in that position was really humbling.
One of the children to whom the players gave a Corinthian Casuals shirt was a young boy who had been run over and developed cancer in his spine. The players signed his shirt, draped a Corinthian Casuals scarf around his shoulders and posed for a photo with him, bringing a smile to his face. They could only wish him well and left the hospital deeply moved by his story. A few days later, they were told that the boy's pink and chocolate Casuals shirt had been auctioned off and that it had raised enough money to pay for the surgery he required. The players were astonished and emotions ran high when he visited their changing room, revealing that he could now even walk a little. In another story, Chris recalled arranging with a local fan group that anyone could attend a training session of theirs for free, as long as they brought 1 kilogram of non-perishable food to be given to families in the favelas. They raised over 6 tons in total. In moments like these, the Casuals players realised the power of the shirt they wore week in, week out in the Isthmian League, and what it meant to tens of thousands of people in Brazil. Affirming the strength of the connection, Chris recalls a remarkable gesture made by the Paulista players at the match itself, commemorating the 1914 tour that never was.
Well, and amazingly, the Brazilian side, they themselves, and off their own back, I prompted them to do a lot of things that year, but I didn't ask them to do this. They actually wore on the back of their shirts, not the names of the actual players, but they wore the names of the guys who died in the First World War, who had gone there 100 years ago and set up the club. And so I eventually swapped shirts with a guy who was wearing Max Woosnam's name on the back of his shirt, you know, one of the greatest Corinthians of all time, who was there on the 1913 tour, and he was on the boat of the 1914 tour and led a heroic life in war. And so, yeah, it was wonderful. It really did bring the two clubs together, and they seemed to really buy into it. And I think it will make a really emotional film.
Chris Watney's documentary, Brothers in Football, telling the story of that 2015 tour and those of the Corinthians who lost their lives in the First World War, will air on BT Sport on the 10th of November before being broadcast around the world on ESPN channels.
There's no doubting the extraordinary nature of the story of the Brazilian tours, whether 1910, 1914, 1988, 2001 or 2015. But considering the modest surroundings and unglamorous location of the present-day Corinthian Casuals, it's equally remarkable to consider those who make the reverse journey today. Countless Brazilian Corinthians Paulista fans, like Rafael Pedroso from our first episode, feel the urge to make a pilgrimage to a small non-league ground in an unfashionable corner of the Greater London area, simply because they see it as their club's spiritual home. Many, like the Pedrosos, factor such a trip into an existing London or UK itinerary. Some may be studying in the UK or are perhaps here on holiday. Others have been known to make the trip specifically to watch a Corinthian Casuals match. The 2017 playoff final, for example, was attended by Sao Paulo resident Danilo Augusto, who flew 8,000 miles just to watch the game. All share a burning passion to connect their current-day support for Paulista with the historic origins of their club, and they are often moved by the warm welcome they receive at King George's. With club volunteers handing out free scarves and hats, officials inviting them into the home dressing room or to be photographed with members of the first team. Many cite Casuals superfan Roger Stringer, whose role as fan ambassador we detailed in our previous episode, as a particularly hospitable presence.
Hello, my name is Marco Signore from Brazil, São Paulo. I like the atmosphere, the mood, the supporters. I like Roger. I like all these guys here. First time I came here, these people, they hugged me and they treat me as a family member. And this is unpayable. This is the best friend. You know, the way these guys, they treat me, the way they welcomed me, and it's priceless. Corinthians roots are here. So that's what I felt, you know, like the Corinthians in Brazil is very known for being a club that people give the blood for the team, the players. Okay. They play with love. And I see exactly the same here, much more, actually.
My name is Rafael Ferreira. I'm from São Paulo, Brazil. And I had the chance to study in Nottingham University during the year of 2018, this year. And, well, I'm from Corinthians, São Paulo, since my childhood.
Yep.
And my father and my grandfather. And I always knew about, I always was aware about Corinthians Casuals.
Mm-hmm.
And I always wanted to come here and see a match. So today is like a dream coming true, you know. You have thousands of people there which support the club, so and the team. So, well, it's like, for me now, it's like visiting my the father of my club. Mm-hmm. There in Brazil. So that's the respect and also the kindness, you know, we have about Corinthian Casuals.
My name is Gilva Bandeira, and I'm from Brazil.
And you're here with your family. Who are these relatives that you're with?
Yes, so I've got Pedro Henrique with me. He's my nephew. He's 8 years old.
Yep.
He plays for a kids' school in Brazil, football school, which is called Corinthians as well.
Yep.
And that's my dad, Paulo Bandeira.
Yep.
So he's here just for Christmas. He wanted to come here and see the stadium.
Yeah.
And I've got my little niece Tilly,
yeah,
who also supports Corinthians.
Why are you here? Why are you here at this stadium for this match?
Because for us it's a massive thing to be able to come here and see where our team started.
Yes.
So Corinthians Paulista.
Yes.
So it's very important for us to be here today.
My name is Rafael Moro Martins. I'm from São Paulo, currently living in Curitiba, Brazil. My father is a Corinthian supporter. My grandfather was a Corinthian supporter. The whole atmosphere is great, it's brilliant. This afternoon will be in my heart forever. It's great to see your flag waving on the other side of the field. It's amazing how football can bring people together. I mean, people this distance together.
My name is João. I live in the south of Brazil, Santa Catarina.
Mm-hmm.
My family is Corinthiana.
Yes.
Support Corinthians.
Yes.
Corinthians Brazil. My father told them about Corinthians Casuals. And my father told me this club changed lives. 100 years ago, 180 years ago.
He was talking about this club, listeners.
This club, Corinthians Casuals.
Yeah, yeah.
Went to Brazil. This club went to Brazil 180 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
I think this club is special because it's amador. Still amador.
Mm, yeah.
Still amador. Have opportunity for get professional, but still amador.
Yeah.
It's the root of the football.
Yeah, yeah.
You play because you like it, not because the money. I think this is amazing.
My name is Albert Monte from São Paulo, Corinthians, Brazil.
Yeah, it's very important to the Corinthians fans to visit this ground,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
Why is that?
Why? Because in 1910 in Brazil, the soccer was only for rich people in Brazil. You understand me?
Yes.
And Corinthian team in 1910 went to Brazil to play the friendly games and won. Five friends.
Yes.
They working in the railway station.
Yeah, the railway station.
Railway station. And he say we must make the foundation of one team from the workers people. Why the football is only for rich people? And then they make a meeting, and everyone say, but which name? I don't know. If we have the dream and our team one day will be strong and big, we must put the name like this English team, Corinthian.
Yes.
And then, good idea, why not? But put no Corinthians with one S.
Yes.
And then we start the history of Corinthians in 1910.
Yeah.
And now, after 107 years, we have the biggest fans in Brazil, and we have 35 million fans.
Yeah.
And them is the beginning of history, the inspiration of our name, because this is very important for the Corinthians fans come here to visit. I want to say also thank you very much for Roger, the best fan of Corinthians Casuals.
Yes.
He's the first guy who I meet here in 5 years ago. And then I bring to him the flag of Corinthians. I give a present for him.
Yes.
And today he tell me for 5 years, all Corinthians Casuals game, he put this banner here. And for me, there it's a go. Pleasure. It's very important.
Just finally, you just went to the club shop. You bought some things, did you?
Yeah, of course.
What have you bought? So what did you get?
I bought about five shares of that and the other. All my friends ask me the t-shirt, but I cannot buy for all of them. But for three or few.
As much as you can get on the plane. Yeah.
Albert Monte, the last voice you heard, has perhaps my favourite story from the many Brazilian characters I met over the course of last season. It was on a cold November afternoon, following an FA Trophy defeat to Wingate and Finchley, that I was introduced to Albert, his suitcase trailing behind him.
You landed today. You have your suitcases with you at the ground. So what happened? You got a taxi straight from the airport to here?
Yeah, it was crazy, the history, because yesterday my programmation to us arrive in London about 1 o'clock in the afternoon.
Yes, two hours before kickoff.
Yeah, 2 hours before. And then I say, okay, I take one taxi, I have a time and a half before beginning the game.
Which airport did you land in?
In Heathrow.
Heathrow. Yeah.
But yesterday it was too rainy in Sao Paulo.
Mm-hmm.
And the plane was delayed for 2 hours. And then I arrived in Heathrow at 3 o'clock. And immigration, take the luggage.
Yeah.
I come outside for 30, I don't know. And then I take the taxi driver, and he know well the address of here. And he was around.
He didn't know it.
Yeah.
He was lost.
Yeah. And after I say, how much? £100, my God.
Jesus.
£100 in Brazil, you can make a big party. And here I just pay one taxi. It's difficult.
And you missed kickoff, didn't you?
Yeah, of course. But I arrived here 1 minute before the end of the game. I watched in just 1 minute, but I arrived.
Albert was chastened by his £100 match-missing experience, so he did something extraordinary. He abandoned the very reason for his visit.
So you have tickets for Brazil v England on Tuesday?
Yeah, but I want to explain to you something. I have the ticket already for Wembley Stadium Tuesday, Brazil against England. But maybe I'll be changed the planes because Corinthians Casuals play Tuesday also.
They do, away at South Park.
Yeah, probably I give my ticket for somebody. Yeah. I want to watch the Corinthians Casuals game. I don't care about, for me it's more important than the Brazil game.
Albert stuck to his word. Should you find yourself watching the footage of the South Park match online, you can spot a particularly enthusiastic Albert celebrating goals scored by the Casuals, rushing forward to hug the players, genuinely looking like a man watching his team dominate a World Cup final. He had plenty to celebrate too. The Casuals ran out 5-0 winners that night, while England-Brazil finished a goalless draw. If Albert managed to recoup his Tolworth taxi fare through selling the ticket, you have to say that he's played a blinder. And so Broadway to Brazil reaches the end of the road. I hope along the way that we've persuaded you that the Corinthian Casuals are well worth your attention, both for past and present exploits. Whether through learning about the founding of a gloriously successful Victorian side who helped turn around the fortunes of the England national team, getting to know an obsessive first-team manager who takes time out of his day job digging holes to command an against-all-odds promotion for an entirely amateur team, being wowed by facts about Manchester United defeats or Real Madrid colours, or delighting in this slightly surreal spectacle of Brazilian visitors descending on a small non-league ground. The Casuals have certainly shown me over the past year that there is nothing quite like them in our national game. Former England international Stan Collymore seems to agree with me.
Fundamentally, it's really reassuring that there are lots of young lads out there in their early 20s, mid-20s, late-20s, that want to play football for the love of the sport, and that has to be applauded. And it has to be protected. I would like to see Sheffield FC, as the oldest club in the world, Corinthian Casuals, be protected by the Football Association. Many other parts of our cultural life in the UK are protected, arts, theatre. Why not football? And I think that the Football Association, as guardians of the game, should be, rather than volunteers, rather than money through the tills, it should be a protected entity. Because ultimately, people aren't taking money out of the football club, so therefore the Football Association, for me, should be able to step in to ensure its survival in the decades to come.
As far as we're aware, there are no current plans afoot at FAHQ or anywhere else to give the Casuals some kind of protected heritage status. But it says a lot that a former elite-level player can advocate such a concept. For now, alas, the Corinthian Casuals must continue fighting for their survival year in, year out. The ground share with Kingstonian, with all the concerns that come with it, is just the latest means of raising the necessary capital to keep the club afloat. With the 18-19 season now underway, it bears re-emphasising just how historic it is for the club that they are now competing in the same league as Kingstonian, the highest ever league level in their history. James Bracken is delivering a golden age at the Casuals, and everyone is understandably desperate for it to continue as long as possible. Of course, nothing lasts forever, and no doubt there will be rocky times ahead. But to successfully navigate whatever choppy waters come their way, the Corinthian Casuals will need all the support they can get. Whether that's through someone paying £10 on the gate, singing their heart out at a tricky away fixture, or volunteering to clean the dressing rooms. The fan base continues to grow as non-league football in general undergoes something of a rejuvenation, as enthusiasts seek a response to excessive ticket prices and corporatisation at the top levels. But more fans are always welcome, as the club continues in its endeavours to make themselves more known to its immediate inhabitants, those frequenters of the Tolworth Broadway who I somewhat bemused in our first episode. People's lack of awareness is understandable. Neither the name of the club nor its slightly obscure location makes it obvious to the locals what goes on here. But now you know. And should you be in the Southwest London area, finding yourself at a loose end on a Saturday afternoon, with a desire to support an entirely unpaid group of people playing football just for the love of it, then maybe you could treat yourself. And if you do come along to the Corinthian Casuals, we'll see you there. Broadway to Brazil was presented and written by me, Yarrick Zaba, with Dominic Bliss. Produced and edited by Brent Davies, with Tony Banks, our frontline reporter, in the field. Music was from John Forrest. Chris Kelly was web manager, and Kelly Bliss did our artwork. With huge thanks to everyone at Corinthian Casuals Football Club, to the Community Brain for use of the Museum of Futures, and to the man who brought us all together, Robin Hutchinson. Broadway to Brazil was a Creative Brain Media production. Find us at broadwaytobrazil.com, where you can also find our Twitter and Facebook. For more Creative Brain Media output, check out theus100.com.
This is for you.
OK.
Can I do?
Yeah. You want to come? Yeah. You took a picture. It's the right way up, yeah?
Can I do?
Feliz Natal.
Oh.
Thank you, obrigado, for coming here. And, buon viaggio. Thank you, for you. You're welcome. You're welcome. Thank you. Bye, Corinthian.
Thank you.
Bye, Corinthian.
Thank you.
Thank you for coming.
Thank you. My pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you.